And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Declare your independence. I'm Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA Tiefel Studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. Oh, see, I did pretty good that time, Charles. Come on.
That
come
was
on.
A high C, wasn't
come
it?
Come on, come on. You know, there was that video of a guy, you know, he's there with his friends, and they're doing, he just figured he'd yell at a wine glass, see if he could get it to break, and it broke. It went viral. Woohoo! I did. Give me that freaking thing. I'll do that. Maybe not. Charles Goyette is the author.
Don't read that, Ernie. Come on. How long have we known each other? How many times have
we known each other? I don't want the audience to know who you are.
But come on.
All right. Charles Goyette wrote some books.
I don't want to be here because of the path that lies behind me.
All right. He wrote books about stuff. New York Times bestseller. Done a lot, 120-something radio stations. Ron Paul's America with him for a while. And, of course, he was the number one in his slot, super-duper talk show host here in Arizona, IA.
That sounds like something happened a long time ago.
You know, but there's a foundation here in Arizona. Why is it always Arizona? Well, I'm telling you, it was because of the people that, you know, espoused the freedom of, which was every day on your freaking radio show.
That was good.
You know, so this is a foundation. That's why Donna allowed me to stay in radio, is because of you.
Right on. Well, she's obviously the brains of the outfit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Beauty, for sure. So well, Charles needs a producer. Okay, that's all right. You can do Charles.
Don, I remember one day when we were on the air in one of the stations or whatever, and Ernie and I were talking about the show, and we were sitting there, and you came in, and you were like on the other side of the glass or something. But you just came in. I don't know. You bring Ernie the car keys or whatever it was. You came by, and Ernie said, you know, every day I look at Don, I think, what a good looking woman. And I remember that really clearly, and I said, Ernie, you are right. And I don't suppose he probably tells you that every day like he should. But
oh, she freaking
so
reminds
clearly.
Me of, I'm going, you have no idea how people, you know, I win because you're my wife. It's all about me. It's all about me. There, I win.
That's the best thing you've said all day.
I win. Right. Win. Yeah. For the win, you know. Anyway, so no, we appreciate Donna. Donna, you know, that was one thing when we had the Vaccine Education Summit this last Saturday. That was big. You know, we had like 150 people in there.
Wow.
It was, at least 3 to 5 legislators came by, wanted, you know, put their stamp on what I'm like. Yeah, you know, I was kind of butthead. I go, yeah, blah, 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 blah. When you guys do something, let me know, you know.
Yeah, right.
Till
yeah.
then, it's just all politicking.
Yeah,
and, you know, the other girls were really working on it. But in the pictures that we had, there wasn't Donna. You know, we were doing pictures. Donna wasn't there. She's out working. She's out doing something. She didn't get in the picture. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, you know, that's not going to be good. You
better
know?
Get her in that picture if you want to dress it up and get other people to look at it.
Well, there were some that, you know, Dale Bigtree had were Irene Pye that were working. She was one of the primaries we were working with on doing the summit, and she didn't get in it. And I was like, oh, I ain't going over either, you know. So I made sure that she got pictures with and later and kind of be nice, but not a bunch of Donna.
Yeah.
So I'm like, sorry, Donna. Okay. Yeah. But fortunately, she's not a big giant give a crap, you know.
Yeah, she says, I've had about all the public attention I want.
Yeah, no, she's like, nah, I'm good, you know, you know, whatever, you know. So this has been, you're my trouncing through Arizona politics and everything, but you focused a lot on national stuff. You were really more of you had a national audience they were cultivating you for and going on to, and you knew you had a decision to make, and you just said, I don't want that bad.
Yeah, but you know, it was I never came to a crossroads where I had a decision, you know, where like I could go choose to turn the fork on the left or the fork on the right. I
mean, of course you did.
I never had a choice.
Of course you did.
No,
well,
I never
okay.
did. No, I had to do what I had to do, just like you have to do what you
it.
Have to do.
And, got it. And the opportunity was there. You just chose wisely.
Yeah, I think so.
I think so, too.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever.
Well, don't you? I mean, how's your life now? You got remarried, you know?
Yeah, I've been, Allie and I have been together. We actually met in 2006. We became, we decided to share one single house key in 2007, and we've been married since 2008. So we're 11 years married. I'm happy as I could possibly be.
It's been 11 years already?
It's been 11 years. And we have, she has two grandkids. I have three grandkids, so that's five. We're not in your league at all, but, you know, we're, but I still have one son that's not even married yet. You know, he's still.
Oh, really?
Steven's still batching it and stuff. So so we'll have more grandkids down the road. But
is there anything you want to talk about your sons? They got interesting careers and a perspective they share with us on a time. You'll tell the audience about that if you're
okay,
willing.
Okay, well, I don't like to talk about them because you know, their fate is in their hands and stuff. But they're both in the motion picture business, and they're both they both work for major motion picture studios, and they're both executives, and they both live in Southern California.
And they both can afford it?
They can both afford it, and you know, they're very happy. And of course, my hope would always be that they would come back to Arizona. You know, I've got deep roots in this state.
Yeah.
Deep. And you know, I want to be around my grandkids, and I want to be around my kids and stuff. But I, you know,
don't want to move to California.
I don't really want to move to California.
Do they want to move to Arizona? I
there's
mean,
nothing
they,
for them. What do you do?
Well, no, I'm just saying, if the entertainment industry moving there was a problem. I mean, it's not like they hate the desert or anything.
No,
right?
No, they love it, and they miss it. And I sent them a picture of me in the pool with the dog diving in the other day and diving for the tennis ball in the pool and stuff. I sent them the video of that, and they both go, oh, God, we just miss, you know, we miss it. But they'll never come back. I mean, not in the fast lane that they're in, you know.
Yeah, well, what is that fast lane? It's been it was built One Belt Road China. I mean, is that it? Oh, go ahead. This is good.
Okay.
Last night, I go up and I see there's a new episode of South Park, season 580, whatever it is, right? So it's episode two. They just started this season. This whole episode last night was on China influence in American movies and theaters and studios. And they were talking about, they're going to do your, there's no money in albums anymore. They have a little rock band, for their high school, Kyle and them. They're sitting there, whatever they're doing, right? So they go, we got to sign you, man. And we're going to make some money in China. But then they had the China censor standing there in their uniforms of, you can't say that, you can't talk about that, you can't. And the whole episode was about the control of Hollywood from the censors of China, because you're not going to be able to get that access to that money and that market unless you do what they say.
Right.
Is that true?
Well, I'm sure it's true. Absolutely sure. It's a huge market, and of course they want to be in it because there's, there are a billion people that could buy movie tickets and go to the movies. I'm sure, but it's the same thing if it had in the United States. Look, in the United States, somebody said, you can't show this couple naked in bed, or we're going to give you an R rating, and a lot of the theaters aren't going to book your movie. Today, all of them would book the movie. But, we've been through this. It's commercial pressure. It's commercial pressure on
everybody.
Have
you ever seen the documentary, This Movie Is Not Yet Rated?
No.
You would love it.
Oh, I bet.
It's about MPAA and how they do that, the structure, and you got all these different directors and actors. Because they did a documentary with a private investigator to find out who these people are, because it's all secret,
Yeah.
And it's the industry kind of regulating itself thing. I'm going, this was very, and you could see the social and economic engineering that they do. Through that, if you have a violent movie like Scarface or something, oh, heck no, that's an X-ray NC-17, are you kidding me? Chainsaw Massacre to the whatever. And, they have to have cops come in and say how accurate it is, and, the bad portrayal, in the end, the bad guy loses, say hello to my little friend as he dies, and, whatever, right? So they go, okay, we'll give that, we'll let you, show it. Then you have the sexual orientation stuff. If you have teenage sex at camp, in Friday the 13th at Jason coming, it's okay as long as they're killed for their transgressions.
There's a moral lesson in there. See, you had sex as a teenager,
right.
You're dead.
That is exactly, I'm going, Who in the hell is doing this?
None of this is anything compared to the Pentagon's control over these
things. Oh, you want aircraft carrier pictures?
Yeah, you bet. You
bet Kyle Cruz may be recruitment.
Send me that screenplay now.
From the sixth letter of Captain Mark. A pirate's life is characterized by voluntary interactions. Unfortunately, the Crown presses everyone into involuntary servitude. Landlubbers believe slavery was abolished years ago, but the Crown still claims to own us when it crimps us into service against our will. Given sufficient ambition, it would gladly draft thousands of hapless victims to kill or be killed. It's simply slavery by another name. Landlubbers are routinely commanded to serve the so-called justice system in jury duty. But before you swell with civic pride, consider that how you feel is irrelevant to the Crown. You will appear as ordered or face punitive measures. The Crown insists that you participate in your own oppression. A jury summons provides pirates with a unique opportunity to obstruct injustices. A juror can vote not guilty, even if it's proven the law was violated. A juror can acquit for any reason at all, and not even a judge can reverse that verdict. Receiving a jury summons is basically winning the sedition lottery. But if you reveal that you know this during jury selection, you'll probably be dismissed. If the Crown foolishly crimps a pirate into jury duty, it behooves the pirate to conceal their intention to nullify unjust laws. If a master takes 100% of your labor, it's called slavery. But if they only take 50%, they call it taxation, a difference of degree, not of kind. Whether the Crown claims a fortune or a cent is irrelevant. Most of all, a slave owner desires contented slaves, meaning thoughtless ones that accept their bondage. These house slaves see no contradiction in being drafted in a war to end slavery or summoned to a jury to prosecute tax evasion. An ideal slave knows no higher call than the master's will. The Crown's highest ambition is that its slaves revere the authority that subjugates them. But the Crown does not own me. I will not surrender my time and treasure to the Crown's ambitions. Join the conversation at piratewithoutborders.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
You know, I'm trying to talk Charles in while we're gone. I'm going to be on the road for a few weeks, going to Boston area and New Hampshire and Maine and stuff with Bob Anderson, working on it. And we'll be gone. We're doing the show on the road. And I'm trying to, you know, Dr. Frank, you know, you may take on some time. And, you know, the Liberty Advisor, Tim Pichot, may do a day or so. And then if we can, you know, let's convince Charles Goyette to
do it. One thing is if
Charles.
Test one, test two. So if I do your show, am I going to hear myself introducing myself?
Probably.
Yeah. And welcome back to our Ernest Hancock Show.
You know, that's one thing, the voice that you hear, which is, you know, all the rejoiners and everything, that's Charles. You know, he did that for me. I'm going, can I use your silky tones? Why, yes, you can. I'm like, woohoo! So, you know, those, because we got to keep the, you know, you recognizable and the voice out, because Charles, he's coming back to radio someday. Someday.
I don't know.
This may be it. This is it.
I can't announce it yet because it's not mine to announce, but I have a new book coming out probably in the end of January, end of February.
Really? Yeah, how are you publishing?
A publisher.
Oh, you're going to, that old-fashioned publisher?
No, so? This is a kind of a different, but it's a publisher, and it's theirs to announce. It's not mine to announce, and so it's not public yet. But anyway, that.
So I can't give out the name of the book? It's about like freedom stuff?
And we're fighting over the name right now. We're not really fighting over it, but we're looking for the best. Yeah, it's kind of about freedom stuff and stuff.
Well, is it the economy? Well, I tell you what. What shall we talk about today?
I don't care.
All the stuff that's in your book. We're not saying it's in the book,
no.
But it's stuff he knows about might be in the book.
No.
All right, okay. So we're not going to talk about it.
Yeah.
So when you're ready, man, we'll promote and push the crap out of it.
Yeah, come on and talk about that.
Well, this is one thing I haven't really, I just started hearing about this. This is a thing that, you know, hadn't really been on my radar. There is a meme of Joe Biden and his son, and it's got this viral meme that, you know, Trump is posting. He's like, I don't know nothing about nothing. And then, of course, they got a picture or something. Do you know what they're talking about?
Well, I kind of know the whole story, but I'm not sure what you're talking about the meme.
Twitter removed a viral meme posted by President Trump, which highlighted Joe Biden's duplicity on his son's business dealings in response to a claim by the copyright owner. The meme showed Biden denying they had ever spoken to his son.
Oh, I know that one, yeah.
Okay, so this is, you know, Twitter is removing.
Yeah.
Me, I mean, of all the story, you know, oh my God, you know, Trump and Biden didn't. I don't care about that. Twitter is removing stuff.
It's a photo of four guys golfing. and it's Hunter Biden and Joe Biden and one of the Biden's partners in this Burisma or whatever it's called, the Ukrainian oil company, and some of the poor some other poor fourth guy who's probably just like, yeah, I'll play around with you guys. You know, so he got caught in it. But it's just a photo of the guys. And the idea that, you know, some copyright holder would stop them from circulating this this photo is a little bit...
Who's the copyright holder? The guy that took the picture or something?
I don't know.
It doesn't matter. They just filled out the form.
It doesn't matter, yeah, but the point is, you know, why would anybody stop the publication of this picture? Well, the reason they would stop the publication of this picture is because Joe Biden said, I never talked to my son about Ukraine and the oil company and so what? I never talked about it. So here's a picture of him on the golf course. I mean, of course he talked about it. Here's a picture of him on the golf course with his son and one of the other guys on the board of the Ukrainian oil company. You know, 18 holes of golf, the words Ukraine never passed their lips. It's the same thing as his China deal, you know, where Biden and Hunter go over to China on Air Force Two, and Biden Jr., Hunter, I guess is his name, he comes back with a billion-dollar capital deal for an investment fund or something like that. I mean, this stuff stinks. Well, of course it stinks. All of this stuff stinks. And you know what stinks even more than just the sheer cronyism of all of this stuff?
Guys like Twitter taking pictures down.
Yeah, that stinks too. And here's what really stinks to me is what in the hell are the American people doing letting the friggin' military-industrial surveillance complex give $1 billion to some corrupt Nazi regime in Ukraine? What the hell is this?
That was the deal.
And so they're fighting over, you know, well, Hunter was just advising a company. Of course he's entitled to a board fee, and of course he can take out millions of... And nobody is talking about what the hell are we doing transferring $1 billion. Here's how it works. It comes out of the pockets of the American people as $1 billion. It goes to Washington. The guys in Congress go, you know, have drinks with the guys in the military-industrial complex, and they say, yeah, we want you to buy a bunch of missiles, and, you know, we'll sell them to Ukraine. So then Ukraine gets to buy all these missiles from Raytheon or whoever it is, and war machinery from American merchants of death and stuff. But they don't have any money. They're broke. Well, how are they going to buy American merchants of death's production if they don't have any money? Oh, simple. We're going to give them $1 billion for foreign aid.
Hadn't that been Israel for like ever?
It's been every country on the face of the earth were the merchants of death for the whole world. And where do they come? Doesn't anybody know how broke this country is and the American people are so flipping broke?
You know, the reason the AK-47 is seen as the freedom tool and all that kind of stuff is just that people are able to rise up. And what happens is you got the United States going all over the world with these big, giant, gazillion-dollar deals with somebody willing to be able to sign the paper of, you know, how did you pay for that? Well, we just got it from these guys and you owe us and, you know, whatever. And when we fund it, we paid for it, and they get all armed. Well, who's up against all that? It was Russia influence coming in and just giving the people a bunch of AK-47s and saying, go take care of business.
Yeah.
And they got off a lot cheaper. But what are they doing now? Now they're in the arms business for real, and they're out there. They don't have to subsidize them to get them to buy them. People going, that's like half price of this American thing. You know, woohoo, we want some of them S-400s or whatever.
Well, it reminds me of the memory hole, in 1984. Oceania has always been at war with East Asia. Mm-hmm. So in the Ukraine thing, you know, the Ukraine owed probably billions of rubles to Russia, but they didn't have the money to pay Russia back. So the International Monetary Fund plunders the American people and gives money to Ukraine. But what now? We're, you know, visibly at odds with Russia, right? And Russia bad and Russia the
bad.
But all of this money going to Ukraine was to go guarantee the bonds of Russian investors in Gazprom and stuff. I mean, it's just it's all so transparent, and it's just it's plunder, and the American people watch this stuff, and they watch the fighting guys. There's the fighting Hillary, and there's the fighting Kamala Harris, and there's the fighting Trump and stuff. But they're all serving their masters, and they're all serving the military-industrial complex. They're all serving the empire. They're all serving the greater glory of the state. It's just enough to make you sick, and the American people are the victims of it.
You know, the one thing that I see a lot in this is that you have the Obama administration, they're over there doing a lot of stuff, and they use this kind of crony capitalism and with our money to do the foreign aid of Hunter got a job. I mean, all this stuff is just, transparent. But what are we doing now? Here Trump comes. It's always a blame you for what they're guilty of on a much bigger level. They go, well, Trump was threatening to take away their foreign aid if they didn't look at this criminal doing whatever. I'm going, yeah. What the hell are we giving them money for if it doesn't have conditions?
Yeah.
I just assume not giving them money. They shouldn't even want to take it. They don't want conditions. But this is just hypocritical.
Did you know that free aid is a mutual aid, educational, and networking organization?
Okay, we can just yak it during the break, too. Well, let's go ahead and just for the archive. How you doing? What's up?
Great. I'm not going to give any details about them either because I can't say
what the advance was.
But I have two Hollywood projects in development.
Mm.
I've created a mini series. We call them limited series now. They used to be called mini series.
Mm-hmm.
But for somebody I'd like to see it on HBO or Amazon or Netflix or something, about the life of Edgar Casey, the great American sleeping prophet. Went into kind of a trance and did medical readings, cured people all the time and stuff.
Oh, was this
great.
30s, 40s?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I remember.
Yeah,
that.
And I've acquired through a partnership agreement the rights to the story. And so we've created a 6-part miniseries about him, and we're in the process of trying to sell it to, one of the networks. And
awesome.
I have a political thriller, just a feature film screenplay. It's a political thriller set in the White House, and it has, you'd like the story, and I'd like the story, obviously.
Yeah, you can get that story. Yeah. It'll never see the screen.
Yeah, and so I've just begun circulating that.
What do you think? Is it more likely that, it'd have your kind of freedom-oriented bent on it, that it would get done, or less likely?
It gives everybody pause, because it's like, well, we've never seen a story like that before.
Yeah, we know.
That's why you don't realize there's a big market for it.
Tell me about the difference in writing a screenplay as opposed to a book.
Big, big, big difference.
I mean, it's like a comic book. You got to describe the cell, or are you using graphics, or how do you do that?
No, you describe it. You describe it in prose, and it's much, much different. And I've spent years, kind of learning to do it, because I wrote my first couple of screenplays back in the early 90s. So, and I've read hundreds and hundreds of screenplays, and it's not easy to master.
Yeah, you're a big reader. Charles, when you say you read something, the garage runneth over, man.
Yeah. So, but anyway, it's an art. It's a skill in its own right, and the people in Hollywood, this is their business. When, if they get a screenplay that's like amateurish and somebody doesn't understand the basic rules of how this stuff works, man, it goes in the outbox, gone. But I can't write a novel. I can write a lot of different things, but I can't write a novel because I don't read enough novels, and I've never sat down to master, how you do it. But I did sit down to master screenplay writing, and I've done it now.
So what is it, the format? It's like scene one,
right?
It just blah 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 blah.
It all starts
busy,
it,
rainy street, dark and stormy night of whatever the hell.
That's exactly right. It starts on page one with fade in, and it ends on page 117 with fade out. And in between, you have three basic elements. You have the scene, the action, and the dialogue. So you said every one. You scene, paragraph, scene. It's
this,
like,
is what's going on behind them.
Exterior, White House, night.
Okay.
Helicopters buzzing over. Okay, so and that's the scene. Then the next thing is the action, and the next thing's the dialogue. So that's how it works, and it's 120 pages of changing scenes and changing action and changing dialogue.
All right, well, that sounds interesting. Can you walk us through all this as time goes on?
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to get there.
You love liberty. You should immigrate to the Shire.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, we can bang on the table all we want. Yeah, that's one reason why, you know, Charles needed granite tops. Hey, bang, I got a wood top here. Quit banging. You know, but, yeah, granite tops. Yep. Charles needed blue M&Ms and stuff. But, you know.
No, but, you know, the only thing I did need that Ernie always teased me about, because, you know, I used
countdown
to,
clock.
Well, I never got the countdown clock. When I worked at the big stations, I had the countdown clock, but I never had them at the, you know, when I got cast into the outer darkness. But the one thing Ernie always teased me about is, like, I'd have news stories I'd be talking about. Something came off Yahoo or something came off, you know, we printed some story out of, you know, the Sun in London or something. We have a story, and it'd be three or four pages, and I'd always wanted paper clipped together instead of stapled. And Ernie go, What? I'm going to staple this together. And I go, yeah, but could you use a paper clip instead? And he go, why? And I go, because I don't like to rustle the, you know, the sound of rustling the paper.
Yeah, you take one, instead of bending it over, you didn't want to be Rush Limbaugh. You know, and he'd turn the page and so on. Okay. Well, I did it for you.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, whatever.
Just to tease me about it.
I was just like, yeah, whatever. What I tease you about, okay, this is what I tease him about. There'd be a bunch of stuff to print out, which Donna does, and I have, you know, but I, you know, got Freedom's Phoenix, where I have a guest a lot. But what Charles would do, I need these 473 pages print out, you know, and I come to work, I get in there, and he'd come in about like 15 minutes after me or something, but I'd have all the stuff printed out that, you know, he wanted, and then we'd paper clip them together, and I have a pile, and he killed so many trees. Because he wouldn't go to a lot of the stories he never got to. But, you know, that's because you overproduce and you always have something to say.
Yeah.
Well, there was a news guy there that, and he would print it in big copy because he had Coke bottle glasses or something, Mr. Magoo, whatever his name was.
Yeah.
He would do print out his news stuff, but he would use the back of Charles's paper because he didn't want so much freaking waste going on.
Yeah, that's right.
You're killing a lot of trees, man.
Oh, yeah.
Tree killer.
Yeah, that's right.
And this guy would freak, man, all that paper. And we just like, this is the deal. We get reams of paper a week to get over it. You know, this is the way it is.
It's a cost of doing business.
Cost of doing business.
Yeah.
You know, well, I'm looking forward to you coming in. I'll definitely be listening to you get, you know, back on the mic because, you know, Charles is great at this stuff. And he actually reads the books. I don't. I'm like, all right, come on. You know, tell me why I'm supposed to read this book. Charles would read the book. Then I get them on, you know.
Well, I've matured, Ernie, and I'll just give you one story about how that is. I had a show on KTAR at night a long time ago when you and I first met, and the emphasis on that show, not by my design, but the emphasis on that show was a lot of author interviews. Because, you know, there are a lot of interesting authors and stuff, and they were on the tour and things, and, you know, it just fit. It's just the way they kind of wanted that show to be, a lot of author interviews. And so I'd, you know, read stacks and stacks of books, but I'd read the books. But one night I had a guy on, I wish I could remember who it was, and I said, so tell me, I'd sometimes know more about their subject than they did. I'm not trying to brag, but I'd read their book, but I was interested, and I'd go look stuff up. And so I go, well, tell me, you know, is it true that X, Y, and Z equals, what is X, Y, and Z equal? And he goes, I'm not sure. And I go, well, that's funny. It's on page 127 in your book. You know, and then I tell him what X, Y, and Z adds up to. So now I'm on the other side of my first book comes out. I'm on the other side of the story. I'm doing interviews all over the country at radio stations. And I had some little thing in there. You know, when I was writing, I thought, well, I'll give a vivid example of what this is. And I remember what it was. It was like, how much income tax is the average American family of four paying to service the U.S. debt that's held by China? So, you're trying to make the question, you know, China is a major creditor of the United States.
Gosh, no, you didn't remember that factoid, man.
So it was some number. I have no idea what it was. You know, maybe it was the average American household is paying, you know, $463 a year, you know, to service the U.S. debt to China. Okay.
Is that all? Well,
yeah, who knows? I have no idea what it is. So, like, I'm doing this tour, and some guy goes, so tell me, Charles, how much debt does the American household actually have to pay to service the debt that China holds? And I go, I have no idea. And he goes, that's funny, because it's on page 127 in your book.
Zing, karma.
But, you know, you write this stuff, and in the traditional publishing, the old line publishers and stuff, it's a long time between when you write it and when it's finally printed in the hands of people. So, you know, you write something in February, and then it doesn't come out until the following January, and you got a little factoid in there about $437. So it's impossible to remember.
Well, on these tours, when you do that, okay, this is the one question that now's a good time to ask you. When you were on the Clear Channel affiliate here between Rush and Hannity or whatever, you were kicking butt in your time slot and, you know, taking names. Well, they want you to be not pro enough war. They go, I'm not advocating for war. You go, well, it's support the troops. That's what it is. Yeah, it's sure. Really support the troops. Support the troops. Yes. You don't support the troops, which means, of course, we got to go kill people. So I'm going, you go, nah, I'm good. Well, of course, they didn't renew your contract, and then you came over where we were, and we worked together, and kind of we knew each other, because you're right back in the early 90, 91 or something, doing my activism. I wound up on your show, and I go, yeah, I get it. You know, you go, hey, man. Howdy neighbor radio, you know. Yeah, I mean, that's what you call it. Remember you telling me that. I go, how come you don't talk about it? He goes, howdy neighbor radio, man. We don't get that deep on the guy. But you were a libertarian philosophically, you kind of knew what was going on.
I remember, Ernie, there was a sign in the executive producer's office that said, this is true. I mean, I think how this would fly today. But there was a sign in her office that said, what did I say? It was something like, something really bizarre about no person is wrong, all opinions
are valid,
or something like that, you know. And I'm just like rolling my eyes going, I'm going to be a good fit here.
What was her name, Lori or something?
Oh, this was long before that. This was it.
There was one, she went on to WABC, you know, ABC, well, anyway, where Stern was. And I remember, we've done a lot of things, you know, for you and Jim Sharp and other guys. Whenever there is a liberty-oriented talk show host, we'd like make a campaign out of it. We need to show some love, man. There needs to be support and signs and all that. Well, we got Jim Sharp, the morning gig, you know, over there.
Sure did.
And she called me, and she goes, were you behind those signs? I go, not as far as you know. You know, it's not, I ain't taking credit for nothing, man. I'm like getting in trouble. But we would put up signs for stuff just to be buttheads, and then call the newspaper and say, is it, you know, vote, you know, this person for that, and do it. And they go, well, he's a talk show host. You can't. I go, yeah, you should fire him. You know, we call the paper, you should fire this guy. And then they knew it was us after a while. You know, it's just, Ernie got some more press. Yeah, it's so easy for me because these guys are so predictable. You know, if you can play to their weakness, they just, that's coming. Arizona 2020, I met with Shauna Bolick last Friday.
Okay.
You know, Clint Bolick's Supreme Court Justice's wife is a representative in this district where I live. And I don't want to say my representative. Nobody's my representative. That's me. Yeah. You know, so, but in the district that I live, as done by the Crown, they say my representative is. So when we met, you can tell. There is a political mindset in some people, and gosh darn it, we're going to use the force of them. We're going to get some. And, of course, she, because being Clint's wife, you know, she understands, you know, our language and freedom and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, it's still a political thing, you know. What do you think the politics in Arizona is going to be in 2020? Go, we got McCain's gone. We have, it's kind of purple state, whatever the hell that means. We got all the pensions are going to go here. I mean, you know, it's like everybody else. Yeah. And we're probably better than most states, but it's going to be devastating here. Yeah. So I know what the hell's happened to, like, Illinois, know. So what do you think the future is in the political landscape, and why they're going to be begging to get Charles back on the air?
No, they're not.
Hell, they're not.
No, they're not.
Watch me. All I got to do is make it a project. You watch.
Yeah.
You just got to say you're willing to do
it,
man.
Are you behind those signs, Ernest?
Not as far as you know. You know, watch me. You know, it's kind of, you're willing. And we got, well, when we come back, that's what we'll focus on. The politics here in the nation, the economics, international, and as it applies here in the people and the mindset in Arizona. Who would know better than Charles Goyette? I can't think of anybody. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't.
So good! So good!
I got a year.
You can't sing over the.
I know, that's why I did. You know, one time I did. I tell you what it was. I played some Boston or Queen or something. You know, whatever the hell it was. And when I came in a little bit and I got admonished by my board op saying, "Hey, you're a talk show. You're not allowed to sing in the rejoin." I'm going, "Oh hell no!
Yeah, right.
Watch this, you know." So that's why I do it, is just because, you know, screw them, you know.
Was he making a comment about your singing ability, or you're making a comment about what you should and should not be allowed to
do? I'm sure there was a little bit of both in there, but it was. But yeah, no, it's.
People tell me all the time I can't sing either, and I don't go, "Oh yes, I can." I go, "Yeah, you're right."
Well, I didn't say I do it well, but I'm freaking going to do it. I'm going to have some board op tell me that I can't. I'm like, really? Well, so all day I came back, you know, just so get over it became a thing. So I'm not claiming, well, obviously, you know how well I do or do not. So, you know, get over it. The one thing that Charles has always been is a standard here in the Valley. And you've had big impact on a lot of government freaking boondoggle or whatever. You've stopped a lot of stuff. You know, if you didn't stop it, you sure as hell articulated the argument against it. It had long legs. You know, people still talk about you and so on. But as time goes on, that starts to go.
Sure.
You know, it's just like, you know, it's been, 11 years or so since the Lovelution. And I go, yeah, that Ron Paul, you know, Lovelution logo, yeah, we did. And we're kind of part of it. The what?
Yeah.
The who?
Yeah.
You know?
No, I know.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's fleeting, dude.
You know, yeah, whatever, you know. But it adds to the resume, and you are a New York Times bestselling author, and you got another book coming out. You got some screenplays. So this is when you started. I remember we were doing the interview for Liberty. It was a documentary on the Ron Paul thing. And we're over at your places when your agent called in, you know, that you had sold the book.
Yeah.
And the conversation, I mean, minutes before, I'm like, "Charles, man, your time's coming. Don't worry about it. It's going to be coming again." Yeah. You got another book. You got this. And I'm going, you know, this always coming. What do you think's coming? Is it going bad? Are we going to be better? You know, all the economic stuff that's happening, 2020 election cycle, impeachment of what? You know, the people better prepared now or not?
No, they're really ill prepared, and it's something we just have to go through. You know, somebody says, you know, what do you do? What's the best cure for a hangover? And the answer is, you know, don't go drink so much on Saturday night, and you'll find Sunday morning hangover gets cured real fast. So it's the same thing with America. You know, if people think you can have $22.6 trillion in federal debt, and you can have, you know, $200 trillion in unacknowledged, hidden below the waterline, below the iceberg debt, and if people think that you can squander the people's capital, so there's no capital left in the capitalist country, if people think you can do all of this stuff, if people think that you can treat generations to the assumption that somebody will pay for their, you know, their consumption and their lifestyle and stuff, and that it can go on forever, it's like, okay, so you don't have to call it karma, but it's just sort of the law of reckoning, of economic law of reckoning, you know, the two sides of the balance sheet. And so,
but they never let a good crisis go to waste.
No.
They create this, all it gets bad, and then what's going to come after, and then that's where the role of, I don't know, the people, you and I, whatever influencers, kind of, you know, hell no, which is why so many things get banned on YouTube, Google searches don't have any more. We recreated our search. We'll be making a bigger deal out of, we do some releases here in a few weeks, but the search engine on Freedom's Phoenix is now better than Google.
Good.
When you go to Google and it has, you have a feature on there and you go in the search, it will say freedomsphoenix.com Google, you know, anything from Google, but it was on Freedom's Phoenix, it'll come up, or I can search my own engine, or you can just search Google without it. When you do that, a bunch of the stories that we've been archiving, 300,000 plus over the past 15 plus years, since 15, what is that? So that's like 14 years that we've had it on there. And I go, I know we wrote about it. I know this. I know it. So we redid the search engine on us. I go, there it is.
Wow.
Google is trimming crap loads of stuff.
Are they? Yeah, I'm not
and
surprised.
And I'm going, holy crap, hundreds of thousands of Freedom Orient. Just go to freedomsphoenix.com and search that first. Then you'll find it.
He who controls the past, Google, controls the present. He who controls the present controls the future. This
Boom.
Is the whole game plan.
Boom.
It's the whole game. And so all this stuff goes down the memory hole. I'm glad you're, you know, preserving the record for posterity and stuff.
It's that's what the IPFS thing is about, too. All of our stuff now is not just on a server. It's on multiple servers on a node network, kind of like, you know, decentralized nodes for, like, crypto and stuff. But the interplanetary file sharing is for that reason, because I know that a lot of stuff that we, that's why we had the mid page. Why don't you go to the mid page? Why don't you just go to the article? Because I want some of the, at least some of the article, the comments on it, the links to other stuff, the kind of, you know, so that that doesn't go away. I right. guarantee that will not go away from me, but anything else, especially Yahoo, we used to do a lot of stuff from Yahoo. Yahoo News had, well, I encouraged all our writers and everything not to use Yahoo links, because after a month or two, they just go away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't stay. So what should stay? You know, what's the, what do you hope the next generation gets?
I don't know, but you know, it's all kind of it's unfolding kind of in slow motion. All of this stuff, you know, there's a reason that the statists on the left and the statists on the right are fighting so bitterly now. You know, things have gotten really, really ugly, and you know, they tweet at each other and they, you know, want to impeach one another and they want to kill each other and stuff like this. The reason it's gotten so ugly is because the resources that they use to buy office and stuff are shrinking. And so the fights get more and more desperate and they're trying to claw each other's eyes out, because it's not like, the, you know, the fat old days of the Great Society and LBJ and Richard Nixon and stuff, when there's so much American money to plunder to buy your way to office and stuff. The pie is shrinking. And so the politics are getting much more desperate. This is what's going on in the whole culture, though, too. It's the exact same thing. You know, the more that they are losing power over the minds of people, that all the institutions of our lives are in crisis breakdown. I mean, churches, the legal system. I don't have to tell your listeners this. Everybody knows it. The legal system, the education system, the government system. Every institution of our lives is in breakdown. And here's what happens under the circumstance. They become more and more desperate to hold power. So it's what you see from the state. You know, they are losing their grip. It's unstoppable. They are losing their grip. This is what you're always been on the leading edge of. They're losing their grip. They will not have their grip forever. But in the meantime, they become more and more desperate. That means more and more authoritarian.
Corner
more
tiger.
And more violent. Yeah, exactly. To try to hold on. The success, the real solution to all these problems is for them to, you know, take a little more of a, you know, kind of a Zen approach. Yeah, we're losing our power. Why? Well, we didn't use it wisely and we've squandered it and we're bad people and stuff like that. We should just, you know, gracefully let go of things, the first things on the leading edge that we can't really, you know, they should start realizing the nature of the times, that the wheel is turning and they're going to lose their power. But instead they resist, they dig in their heels, and things become more violent, more polarized, and it can lead to really ugly periods.
What do you think it's going to be? Instigated violence? I mean, they've tried, you know, got to have a civil war. We got Antifa over here. We got Proud Boys over here, and they arrived on the same bus, you know, and we got this constant. Seriously. You know, I mean, there's videos of people going, hey, man, I'm on, you know, they're like right. And then they go out and take positions and action. I mean, you know, it's just, we've been through this before.
Yeah.
You and I have gone and covered this stuff over and over and over. Do you think I keep doing it because I guess it keeps working? Is it going to stop working sometime?
Everything they say is a lie. You know, like I watched a lot of TV over the last couple of days, and this gun thing, I guess it's because of Beto O'Rourke or something, but the gun thing has been front and center on all the, you know, the nighttime Fox and CNN and MSNBC show, the gun thing. And all they're talking about is assault weapons, which you and I know are just, you know, because of the way somebody designed the grip or something, you know. So, but anyway, but the funny thing is, it's all sold to the people as, you know, to reduce murders and gun violence and stuff. You know, all 85% of the gun murders in America are handguns. You know, they're not AK-47s. I mean, it's all nonsense. So why are they focused on AK-47s? Because it's
they
the
want
tool.
The people to defend against the guys with the handguns.
Of course.
You know, we're going to keep going without commercial interruption so that, you know, like Charles gets to talk and stuff. So we're going to go ahead and just yak it, because we got to get into, you know, European Union, the debt. foreign policy, North Korea, China, Russia. I know Charles has an opinion about something, so we're going to get into that. And maybe I'll squeeze out, it'll be a little secret, squeeze out what his book's going to be about. You know, you never know. He might, by accident, that guy tricked him. You know, then a lot of the other stuff that's going on, our plans, you know, for what's going to happen in the 2020 election cycle, what Charles might do. We've been trying to recruit him to run for something like forever.
Oh, that's going to happen.
And he's like, maybe not. You know, Allie's like, nah, I vote no. You know, but I tell you, there's going to be some fun. What might we use Charles for? I don't know. We'll rope him into something. Blows book. Go to the stream.
Don't you hate.
Okay. Foreign policy, I want to tick off a bunch of stuff. Every Wednesday, we do, except last night, I think.
Are we on the air? Are we like...
No, well, we're recording and it's live streaming. Okay. Yeah, so it's streaming on all the platforms and all that kind of stuff, and then we have the recording.
So I won't say anything about that one time when we did that one thing then?
Yeah. Right?
Okay.
I care. What I want to do is rattle off like we do the kind of James, go around the world, and if you don't have an opinion or don't know, then I don't know, don't care, okay? My first thing is, last night we had a guy named Boris, what's his name, that Gerfand, I think, and he is an Orthodox Jew from Russia. In 1991 or so, 1991, there's Russian tanks on the streets in Moscow, and he's 21 years old, and he's like, screw this, I'm outie. So he goes, I go to Israel, nah, they're going to tell me what to do too. I want to go America. So he comes here and he lives in the valley and he's like, you know, I don't have anybody tell me what to do anymore. And according to him, and you know, I'm freer and yay, and he got a green card and his citizenship, he's legal. Now, he would read and he has friends back in Russia and he could read Russian newspapers. He has friends back he stays in contact with and everything. And I know Putin and who he is and what he is and what he's going to do. And as he deciphered a lot of this, he would send himself text messages with full details of Clapper did this, Brennan's doing this, Putin's doing it. And he knew what was going on. He was getting this feed. And he goes, let me tell you how you get the attention, everybody. He texted it to himself with all this. And he knew that they knew. You know, things would happen based on it. So he's going, look, I know they're reading it. That's why I texted it to myself, because I know they're reading it. You know, a Russian, in the U.S. Yeah. saying text, you know, I guarantee that. So he would see things happen based on his, he goes, well, that worked. I'll do some more. I'll send some emails. I'll contact the Trump guy. I'll talk to the FBI. So then Peter Steinmetz comes across this guy, bought a car from him or something. And, of course, you know, Peter's down low. Ooh, Ernie, you need to talk to this guy. And I wasn't going to out Peter until he did, you know, whatever. You know, so I go, all right, talk to him. He comes on. Tells me his basic spiel. I go, look. You know, he's like, look, I know all, it's an inch thick. It's around here somewhere. It's like you know, inch and a half thick of documents and emails and text messages. And he wanted to get it, his phone number on. I mean, he didn't care. I want to get it out. So then I, you know, it's kind of like I wind up undead, you know, because I just want everybody to know that it doesn't do him any good. Just bring more attention to it. So he puts this out, and he's going, this was his scenario, and I'll see what you think. Putin was doing opposition research on Clinton and Trump. Duh. Okay? To say he wasn't would be naive anyway. So he's doing all this. He goes, we need to have control in the White House, just like the Clintons with all the FBI files from back in the 90s. They were trying to control Clinton Foundation of we got our own little whatever. He goes, well, I want my list. So, which, like, he probably already had it anyway. But, you know, there, Putin comes in, and he had all this opposition research. He knew about the GPS thing. When Snowden came out with all these different programs, he's like, really? Well, he started his own programs, or they had infiltration into whatever, and they had the codes of the back end. This is what he's claiming. So when they found out, when Snowden came out, they changed all the master codes and whatever, so Putin kind of lost a lot of the stuff that he had access to. But they have all these, you know, go ask the Russians. They have the emails. And they got, you know, probably, okay? Go ask NSA. I lost, you know, that one, my favorite, you know, porn video of whatever. Can you, you know, get it for me, you know, kind of thing. People have done that. They called up, made fun, done prank phone call. Hey, man. And then they call back this one Iranian guy, and he goes, You know, my friend said that when I called you about, you know, I had this one that I shouldn't. You're not putting me on a list, are you? You know, and it was a spoof that he did. Sure. He kept calling back and having it on this YouTube. It was funnier than hell. So I'm just going, and they're going, well.
By the way, just to interrupt you, not for once, did you, you've certainly heard the Adam Schiff spoof, right? Where the shock jocks of the morning radio team call him up, got him on the air, and spoofed him. Now, we have this stuff.
Oh, yeah, it was like a year ago or two. Yeah, I remember that.
It's hilarious.
So this is, his point was, is that Putin was actively working with, no matter who was going to be in, they're going to be their puppet, like they believe Obama was. Well, if Hillary came in, they wanted to be able to control her, so they get, and then, oh, come this Trump thing happened. And they went, whoa, they didn't see that one coming either. He's of the opinion Putin respects Trump. Finally, I got a leader that's not a pushover puss, and we can do it no matter how crazy he is. But, I mean, you know, whatever he's doing, and it doesn't even matter. But at least, you know, he's in America for whatever the hell that means. Now, this information that came into Putin's, you know, lap, and he's sitting there massaging it, he's saying that part of the coup was, no matter who it was, they had enough dirt on both of them that they were going to impeach or have them not sit, or it was going to be so bad that the Congress was going to pass an amendment to the Constitution to allow Obama to have another term. Okay? This was the plan. And I'm going, this tells me, and Frank and I were interviewing him, we're going, this kind of proves that, you know, Putin really doesn't understand America. You know, for to go to think that that would go through. Hey, man, they just passed a law. You follow the law, right? It's going to be a law, constitution of the law. And I'm going, you definitely don't know America. You could say, you know, that's going to be their salvation, is they, Congress passed a law and Obama gets another for you, which is what everybody was threatening, you know, is going to happen. Oh, my God, we can't. If they made one move towards that, I'm like, it served my purpose. Yeah, I go, what's the freaking point now? You know, it's like, screw them. So, but he couldn't understand that. Being a Orthodox Russian Jew, come here in America, it's like, well, we follow the law, don't we? Rule the law. And I'm going, yeah, right, you know. So this was, he goes, oh, yeah, Putin knows America. He just, was that scenario a possibility? Do you believe any of that to be accurate or true, or that is something that just pie in the sky, or kind of, I mean, nothing surprised me anymore. Yeah. But, you know, this is, do you think something like that would have been able to be bulldozed through?
Yeah, no.
No.
Yeah, no. It's even like Supreme Court packing in the 30s. You know, people loved FDR. They reelected him four times because he promised, you know, he would give them free stuff and he would save
chicken
the world.
Every pot.
And even if I have to start a bloody international war and get a bunch of Americans killed in place like Pearl Harbor as sacrificial victims to get us into the war, he said, you know, I'll do anything if you'll love me. And the people say, well, we love you, you know, and we'll love you for a long, long time. And he goes, good, because now I'm having some trouble. I want to pack the Supreme Court. And the people go, well, wait a minute. You're not allowed to. You can't really. That's a little bald-faced.
Because he couldn't get what he wanted. He went from 9 to 12 Supreme Court justices so he could get a majority or whatever.
Yeah. So I don't think anything like that would fly. I see this whole thing.
It was successful. But,
yeah. I can be wrong, too. But I see this whole thing as, you know, a deep state operation. You know, to make certain that we don't change our foreign policy of imperialism, and that we don't stand down the toe-to-toe thing with Russia.
They'd go to any end to do it.
Yeah, they'll do anything. They will do anything. They will kill people in big, big numbers if they have to, but they will not let that, they won't let that happen. And I think that's basically what it's all about. It's about the empire and the deep state. And you see this, you know, I mean, look, anybody that looks at this whistleblower thing about Trump and Ukraine and Biden's and stuff like that, the whistleblower in the White House is a CIA guy. Oh, I'm shocked. I'm stunned. It's a CIA guy. Gee, but I don't suppose he works with the CIA, does he? You know, it's all deep. This is all deep.
You know, this is
stuff.
The one thing that was interesting on that story is that it wasn't a direct listening to the conversation himself.
Right.
It was somebody told him. Well, they had just recently changed the policy in the CIA that you could do a complaint on stuff you hearsay.
You had to be a fact witness to do a whistleblower complaint. You had to be the fact witness. But just in time so that they could have this just, you know, 2 weeks beforehand or whenever, they go, well, we got to get this policy change because we got this plan unfolding over here.
I know. It's ridiculous, man.
You know, I told you about this screenplay I've written about it's kind of a White House political thriller.
Yeah, you got to add that one in there.
Well, no,
new method.
You know, the reason I finally sat down to write it is I had a book talking about all this stuff that I could not get published. Publishers wouldn't touch it. And I understood, look, they want to make a dime and they don't want to get, I understand how all this stuff works, but I thought somebody's going to cut, I couldn't get anybody to touch it. So I said, hell with it, I'll write it into a fiction. More people will see.
That's what Doug Casey does.
We'll see, more people will see a movie than will ever read the book anyway. So.
You know, Doug Casey, had him on, he's been writing books. He's got anti-hero, whatever. He's got this guy that he does a lot of. He's a successful drug cartel guy. What did you think was going to happen? And he does this and does that. And it's all this freedom on the edge stuff and why and the state sucks and all that. He goes, yeah. When you write a novel, you can write down whatever
right.
you want.
Yeah.
So he's you got a novel in you? There's something you want to write? Whatever
yeah,
you want.
That's right.
Do you?
Yes, I don't have the skill. I don't know. I was thinking about finding a really good novelist that could turn my screenplay into a novel so I could have a novelized version of it also so that, when the film comes out, I'll, make revenue from the book also. But it would take me a year or so to learn how to write a novel. I just don't have the time to sit down and learn.
Well, what are you doing? You're writing?
Yeah, I'm doing a lot of writing, man. I'm writing, I ghost wrote a couple of books for people.
Really?
Yeah. About topics you wouldn't even believe I would know anything about.
Well, you just do research and be able to put sentences together and have
good
grammar and spelling
crap.
Yeah,
bring a point of view anyway. So, so I did that. I'm writing a great deal of economic political commentary anonymously for a client. I have a client that I write a great deal of stuff for. It's not under my name, but I'm working.
So you got a job
all the time.
Well, you come across a lot of stuff. When I go here, I'll show the audience, okay, and you can see it up there. What I do when I go to Freedom's Phoenix, I have ad blocker and all the ads turned off, so it looks different to some people. But when I log in, it gives me a lot of things that I can do. But a lot of people want to know, who is this Freedom's Phoenix reader for? Robert Lee or Gina or whatever. Where are all this? Well, a lot of this in the morning that comes up is Donna. She gets up early. She sends it to Gina. She posts up, whatever interests her. To me, it's a different flavor. So the afternoon edition is the early edition kind of thing. So when I go in, I go into this custom module that we'll be turning on for everybody. You'll start getting this power because I got the power. I want to share the power with you because you can have the power. And in a custom module, I have all these hot links. Okay, these are all the places that I go, and I go through a lot of, it's lefty, righty, science, this, that, whatever. I got all kinds of stuff. So when I go here and I go through, it takes me a couple of hours to scan the internet for the things that I think is interesting. I might even read some of them, watch a couple of videos, got stuff on the side, finish it later. I'm out at night, hanging out, back of the table in the patio. If I go and I read stuff, where do you go? What's the information that you get? What's the sites that you find the most advantageous?
Well, let me look at my phone, see what I have.
I tell you one, Zero Hedge.
It's great.
Yeah, it's always been. Look, and it's getting more and more and more and more. Hell, it might as well just be Freedom's Phoenix.
Yeah, it's a great site. It's really good. They don't produce as much material as they used to. I don't know. They slow down with old age, but
it's like every 20 minutes they publish now. It's on their thing. It's like, boom, story.
I go to Target Liberty. Do you go there? Mm. Bob Wenzel? Oh.
I am now.
He's not exactly our guy, but he's hardcore libertarian, and you'll agree with him about 95% of stuff. And he's, he's bold. He's the guy that marched into the Federal Reserve and gave a speech on why the Federal Reserve should be shut down. Anyway, Bob Wenzel, he has two websites I like. He has one called Target Liberty, targetliberty.com.
Okay,
and he has another one called, he's an economic consultant. He has another one called Economic Planning, economicpolicyjournal.com. Yeah, he's really good. Obviously, I love, all the Lou Rockwell stuff. I love the Rockwell blog and the Rockwell. I like all of that. I go to, there's a blogger named Steve Saylor who's very clever and I like a lot. I go to Tacky Magazine, Theodore Tacky, Tachycopolis or whatever.
Hey, wait, you go too fast.
Okay.
Okay, Tacky what?
Just Tacky Magazine. Just T-A-K-I. He's a Greek shipping maggot air. But he's written for the London newspapers for a long time. He's kind of a fun, high-class playboy guy. He's probably close to 80 now or something, but he's a fun writer, and he exposes the pretensions of the people. But he has a webpage. He was one of the guys that funded the American Conservative when they first started as an anti-war magazine back in...
Evolved into...
Yeah.
Okay, so now we have Economic Policy Journal.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And we have...
TargetLiberty.com.
Tacky Mag... Yeah. And then I got TargetLiberty.com. And there was another one I missed in there. That was their third one, I think.
That's all I can remember right offhand.
Okay.
But those are good.
So these are, and this is what I do. I'll go, all right, Target Liberty, and I copy the URL. And this is for the audience, you know, so you know how you can do this. I go customize features, and I go into this custom quick links that you can customize on your own page. So Charles gives me one, and I got some I got to get rid of because they just suck. They're so bad. You know, I'm going, all right, let's see, which one's the first ones that I can get rid of? Well, you know, you do have some of the left guys up there, sure. But, you know, I'm not. Like TED Talk and Wired Magazine has become worthless. I'm going Wired. You know, you'd think you'd get Wired Magazine. It's just so bad. So I'm going to go edit this. And go, I changed my mind. We're going to do these guys. Boom. Target Liberty. So I go, Target Liberty. Target Liberty. Boom. Interchanges. Now that's something I go to every day.
That's good.
You see?
Yeah, he gets some good stuff on there. He's a good one.
See, there it is.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I'm so, you know, I look at some of the leftist sites too, because they'll tell you that, you know, there's a select limited things they'll tell you the truth about, just like there are select limited things people on the right will tell you the truth about, you know. But you have to be discerning. But I'm sorry to hear this about Wired, because there was a time you could get a lot of good
I know
scoop about
they
the,
it's so much they're so bad it's yeah, just really
sorry about
got
that.
Me I just you know so I'll do we'll trade out Daily Cause. See, I have had a lot of these guys are going, you know, remember when we went to Camp Casey and all that kind of stuff and we reported from there. All those, when they did the House of Peace thing and they had the Wi-Fi deal to where all these blogs, it was like Common Cause and, you know, Daily, whatever the hell, Daily
Fire
Cause,
Dog
Common
Lake
Dreams,
and,
all the Raw
Wheel.
Story, you know, yeah. Salon, you know, these guys. And that was the beginning of this, was the 06 candidate, Obama, you know, building up. And, well, Pelosi became Speaker. And all. You could see the progressive roots. And it was Scott Horton and Alex Jones and I were there. We're the only three that kind of go, you see what's going on here, right?
Yeah.
And I kind of had a little bit more of an in because I was reporting as the producer of your show, and I did some other, you know, shows on Air America there. So they kind of gave me that libertarian gets to be here, eat Air America, you know. Well, I got the marching orders of, you are to report on this, you're to do this, you're not to do that. I'm going, whoa, who the hell is telling you guys to do it? I ain't in that club, whatever the hell a club that is.
Yeah.
And then people come out and they go, well, what are you talking about? What's going on? You don't see what's happening here?
Yeah.
So it was obvious to me what was happening. And these guys that were born of that are getting replaced with some of these, because I never go to them. There's just so much BS.
Yeah.
You know, so these are, what are you looking for in a site? Truth, justice, American way? What are you looking for?
I'm not looking so much for a viewpoint as the story behind the story. You know, somebody that goes out there and gets some of the details that the mainstream media blue pencils out of the story, you know, you don't find out about. I mean, we were talking this morning about, you know, how the CIA changed the standard for what qualifies as a whistleblower, that you had to be, used to have to be a fact witness, but just coincidentally, and it was a coincidence, just hours before their whistleblower popped up, just hours before they changed the standard so that you could be a hearsay. Oh, you're a hearsay whistleblower. Wow, we don't think a lot of hearsay in the American jurisprudence system and in the common law, but if you're in the CIA and you're not a fact witness, hearsay is going to be just fine. So,
made that policy change?
Well, the CIA did.
Well,
I don't know who did it.
Yeah, it always comes down to somebody.
Yeah.
You know, this.
Hey, that's a good question. Who had the Patriot Act already written before 9/11?
They, them, those.
Okay. So those are the people that changed the policy about the whistleblowers.
They, them, those are really in charge of everything. Yeah. Do we know who they, them, those are?
We know a lot of them.
Really?
Well, I mean, they're,
Banker,
you know,
this.
They're the disgusting status. And yeah, and they're, you know, and their visible faces are guys like Brennan and Clapper and stuff. But, you know, it's a big kind of organic thing of people that, you know, love power and don't mind wielding it.
Yep. See, I got it. Done. The private keys of Julian Assange have been viciously tortured out of him.
Is that from Target Liberty?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you're not going to read that in the mainstream media. Oh, this whole thing, this is what drives me crazy. You cannot turn on Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, as though you would want to, but you can't turn them on or go to, you know, read any of this or anything about bringing them out. Whistleblowers. We got to protect this whistleblower. No, we can't let his identity be known. Trump might want to threaten this whistleblower. Oh, he's threatening him. He might want to kill the whistleblower. You got to protect the whistleblower. And meanwhile, they're torturing Julian Assange to death.
Yeah.
You know, what a bunch of phonies, man.
I'm really, you know, this is, I give you an example. It is Saturday Night Live premiere Woody Harrelson. I'm going, Saturday Night Live premieres usually don't suck. I'm probably going to have to put up with some Alec Baldwin Trump. You know, they keep saying he doesn't want to do, you know. And but, you know, Woody Harrelson and the premiere. Okay, cool. Well, I don't watch it live. I'll watch it later. And then I saw an article that had that its ratings have plummeted, lowest in, you know, a decade or a long time or whatever. They aren't as relevant anymore. There's, you know, they're kind of staying with this Trump bashing thing and going, I'm just going, all right, I'll watch it. Just, it was so lame.
Was it?
I mean, it's not even funny.
Yeah, that's my complaint. It used to be funny, and it's not
even
funny.
When they were, you know, Baldwin, you know, hitting on Trump, doing it, that was funny as hell, but they took one side of the story. Anybody right. that knows what's really going on with this Ukraine thing and so on. And it was just propaganda with a few laugh tracks. And I'm like, Lorne Michaels, then you have what, Norman Lear that did All in the Family, at which they did a reboot. Do you know this?
I knew they did one. I haven't seen it.
I saw the pilot episode, okay? And they have a whole season up there. Woody Harrelson plays Archie Bunker. Tomlin, Marissa Tomei, or Tom, you know, whatever that, you know, and my cousin Vinny, my biological clock is ticking. She plays Edith. Oh, Archie! Okay. Does a great job. Then you have, and then Jeffersons is, God, what's his name? Jamie
Foxx.
Yeah, Jamie Foxx.
Yeah.
So this is big star stuff. They use the exact same script. It's not a remake, it's a redo, okay? So they take the same script and went, they have a live studio audience, and they had Jimmy Kimmel sitting there next to Norman Lear and talking about the good old days when we used to be able to control America through sitcoms. That's what they're trying to do. They want to resurrect Hollywood's influence on television when there's nobody watching. It was entertaining to watch the first episode and kind of see where they're going.
Did it work using the old scripts?
Yeah, no, it was like it you could work. See the history. But
was it funny?
It was educational.
Yeah,
and it was kind of humor. I mean, you know, it was nostalgic. You know, for some of those that lived through that as a kid. You know, I was a teenager back then.
Yeah.
You know, like 13 to 17, 18, around the mid 70s and so on. So when you watch this, you could see how it had such an impact because nobody else was, you know, given these ideas, and they put him in a bigoted bad guy role. It's psychological engineering. Social and economic engineering. This is what they were doing with these programs. And they think that they could just reboot it and do it again. You can see it. We'll do exactly that. We don't want to change anything. It worked last time. This is how these guys think. They're always fighting the last war.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is, but we're going to have Jimmy Kimmel sit there and explain it to you with 98-year-old Norman Lear, which is holding up pretty good. But this is all just a grasp at desperation of it worked before.
Yeah.
And you watch this and you go, that was kind of cool and nostalgic, but they're going, no, We're going to take over America. We got 2020. This is for 2020 election cycle.
It's interesting to me as a media guy all my life to watch. You know, the media is replicating the dance steps of the government. So the government's losing control. They're losing revenue. They're losing credibility and stuff with the passing of each day. And they grow more and more desperate to try to do something, hold on. And I'm watching this go on in show business, too, in everything, you know, from newspapers to TV to movies and stuff, you know, that it's all the, you know, it's slipping between their grasp. And so they become more and more desperate to make it work. You know, and it's a comedy of errors.
You know, one question, is there anything they, them, those wouldn't do?
No.
I mean, to the point of what? When I say there's nothing they wouldn't do, that includes what?
Well, I'll tell you something. To me, it always, you know, the kind of the bottom line is, will they lie you into a war? If they lie into war, why wouldn't there? Why is there any kind of a standard or a barrier against what they would do if they'll lie you into a war? You know, what else is worse?
Yeah, what else is there?
You know, you kill people on both sides. You steal the people's money. You kill people on both sides. You never accomplish what you want. You have regime change wars all over the world that the American empire engineers. None of them ever work, but they keep doing it. And so there's not. So what won't they do? There's nothing they won't do. Well, look, would they take out a president? Would they take out a president if he was going to blow the whistle on him, blow
Hell
their cover?
Yeah.
What won't they do? That's why I wrote this screenplay as a political thriller. You put it in a book, and you cite the real historical examples. And, you know, people go, I don't know, Charles. I go, well, you know, don't take it from me, but everything in here is documented, you know. But if you put it in fiction, then people go, yeah, that's exactly what they do.
Well, this is what this gentleman last night was all about. His whole thing was Putin wants to take over, wants dominion over the world, take over the world. And we go, to do what with it?
Yeah, what's the evidence of that anyway? Where's he expanding?
Hey, we're going to take over the world and leave you alone or something? I mean, you know, he's going to do worse than whatever the hell we got now? I mean, is he against that? Is he for populism? Is he protecting Russia and individual rights? Or the blah, 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 blah? Well, probably not. But, I mean, he's going to maintain. He gets to be there. I can guarantee that. But I'm going, so what's he going to do with it? You know, how is he going to? And I'm thinking like, the Muslim guy. Build the wall and the borders of the Muslims are coming. They're going to get. I go, I don't know. They need a map. I mean, yeah, they're over there. Go get them. One less thing I got to do. I'm wondering what the threat is. You know, what is the target? What am I supposed to be concerned about? He's going to take down the banks. He's going to, you know, compete with the military-industrial complex. And now they're buying Russian weapons and we don't got to subsidize Israel.
Shakespeare put it, as he always did, very elegantly. You busy, giddy minds with foreign wars.
Yeah.
How are you going to transfer money to the deep state? How are you going to transfer money to all the operators of the deep state? How are you going to transfer money to their patrons in the military-industrial surveillance complex? How are you going to do it? You're going to busy, giddy minds with foreign wars.
Yeah, that was one thing. You know, we started right off this country, even after, you know, they kind of, you know, dumped the Articles of Confederation, did that Constitution thing. And, you know, Washington goes, man, don't be doing this. And his final speech, he was very clear, this is where we'll go bad. Yeah. And I think he knew it because Art Hamilton was his, you know, big aide through the thing. He kind of social climber going up.
Freudian slip, you just said Art Hamilton.
Alexander.
Do you remember who Art Hamilton
is? Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
That came out of the past deep in your...
Wow.
Yeah.
Anyway. Art Hamilton was a state legislator, Democrat, big, tall, black guy from South Phoenix, and he, you know, the liberal of whatever. American Legislative Exchange Council, there for a time, he was like the head whatever of that, which is a Coke thing or something, you know, back in the day. And I'm going, what? You know what? Anyway, so that goes way back.
Yeah, way back.
Anyway. You know, but that...
Better not to revive all that.
You know, well, the only thing I need to revive is that here, the legislators going into 2020 are much, as you talk to them, and they know you know, so you skip to the end on conversations. They know how this game is played. They're not even pretending anymore. They're just, I've aligned with the big money of the whatever, and until you guys can compete in principle, you know, advocacy of something future, you know, generations of pension, money, means nothing. It has all gone out there. Even the, this guy is one of us. He's like going, really?
Yeah.
You know, and it takes you about 3 questions and 5 minutes to find out they're not. Who is? You got a favorite legislator or something down there?
Me? What?
You run in the crowds.
You know what? I don't even follow the state political news anymore.
I know.
I don't even follow it anymore. I just I can't stand it. And so I can't bring myself. You know, I still subscribe to the old dead tree newspaper business, you know, because I'm in the media and I'd like to watch what goes on in radio and TV and newspapers and stuff like that. And I still get the newspaper. When I come to the story on page B1 or about what the legislator's doing, you know, just next page.
I just don't care.
You know,
it's not that you don't care. It's that you're not, you just want your brain
matter.
Cells back.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
You go to the a diner or something like that. And you're somebody from out of town or something are interested in the paper. You look, $2 for Daily Republic. That's not like the penny saver.
Is that right? Yeah.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I'm going, all right, you get that and you look at it and you go through, I want my money back.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, because I don't have a bird, okay? I don't need to wrap fish.
I know.
Put down that fish wrap. You open it up and every story is just lies.
It's unbelievable.
When I started getting a lot of interviews, press calling on this vaccine education summit thing, you know, in the last week, man, I want to be my buddy, right? They always gaslight you. Don't you think that? Well, what if? I'm going, wow, man, they gave you your 3x5 card, didn't they? Then I go, well, you know, bring it on. You know, take a look at this, and this. So you're training them, more, and you give them quotes and everything. I'm going, the future, and I did with every one of the reporters, I go, the future is about credibility. And I go, are you going to have any? I mean, are you going to be someone that goes to that, what you say matters? Or you're just a functionary of the machine will spit you out? Yeah,
they don't even know better.
They don't understand.
They have a...
You're on the Southern Poverty Law list up.
Yeah, they've been indoctrinated into a worldview, and there's no... You know, it's like them, you know, Columbus coming back to Europe and say, oh, I've sailed beyond the horizon where the dragons are, and I've discovered a whole new world. And they go, no, you haven't. This is the world. You know, it's just, it's kind of crazy. I've had, I don't even get upset about it anymore. There was a big crime story and crime spree in Maricopa County, guy going around shooting people and stuff. And it was awful. And they put pictures in of the people that were shot. Well, that doesn't do any good. They couldn't find this guy. They put pictures in the paper of the people that were shot. They put pictures of the bloody crime scene. They put pictures in, but they would not put a picture of the shooter in because he was an ethnic minority, and they didn't want to be accused of racism. So what good is it? I mean, there are people, you know, the clerk at the grocery store's, you know, giving the guy change. They're trying to find this guy. They can't find. Well, they got a clerk at the grocery store could tell him, hey, you just bought a pack of Marlboros here, you know, but she's never seen their picture because the news won't put the picture out there. I mean, they're just like, these people are sick.
Okay, what is the purpose? Now, all this control, it's obvious, it's out there, it's documented, but they do it anyway because it serves them in some way. What way? What?
Well, which they are you talking about?
I don't know. The guys that have the influence on the television and radio and newspapers, and they come. I give you an example. Rick Rellis, remember him? He was a columnist at the Republic.
Yeah.
He never lost a chance, man. Ernie was his project, man. It was always tie-dye, wearing dope, smoking, gun-toting. Ernie Hancock says this about libertarian, this stuff, that, whatever, right? So even when I'm at my restaurant, aha! We were always doing media stuff and different things, and he'd be a butthead. Well, when he retired, he went on to kind of guest host for a while, Horizon, you know, the PBS news thing at the evening and so on. Then they did a big, you know, he's retiring. He's not that old. He was like in his 40s or something at the time. But it's like, oh, Rick Ruelas, one of the, you know, the stalwarts of the, you know, blah, 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 blah. And he went through his history. He was a columnist, a writer at the state newspaper, which is ASU newspaper. So I guess he went to ASU journalism school, Walter Cronkite, whatever the hell there. So he would write for the student newspaper. Everybody was saying when they get into the media and the press, they turn bad. You know, they incentivize them. They go, why would they do that? They can just pick them off the tree. Well, that's what they did with Rick. you know, he was doing, you know, government needs of this, and, you know, they get a Pulitzer when they got some law passed to save the children of whatever the hell it is. They give these incentives for your career if you get the change towards what they want, public policy, to more central command and control or whatever. That's how the incentives work. If you're someone about individualism, Charles is not invited to be on Clear Channel anymore, right, you know, right, that kind of thing. So, Rick, I could see they select these guys from the pool of whatever the hell. They're not changed. Right. They're picked that way.
That's exactly right. It's not like, you know, they have to be beaten into submission.
Right.
They're just like, oh, they've never questioned the presuppositions of the state. They've been, you know, they've gone to government schools. They've read government newspapers. They've been educated by government professors. I mean, they don't even know there's another world out there.
What do you think is the future, though?
Of what?
Of journalism. You know, it used to. I mean, you could see it. It was going to be, you know, the more popular than any talking head on whatever network is some skateboarding bulldog.
It's the same future as everything. It's a decentralization. Yeah. The institutions are breaking down. The news institutions, the churches, the education, the school, the legal system, all of these systems, all of the institutions of our lives are breaking down. So the alternative, the solution is decentralization. And that's why, and it's a great thing, so that's why you have on Freedom's Phoenix, you have, you know, like 60 websites that you refer people to. And now something new has happened. You are thrust on your own resources to go through those and find. You got to ask questions. This is the leftist guy. The leftist guy says, you know, bigger state, bigger government is good. I'm not interested in what he says about that. I want to know if he has anything to say about, you know, X, Y, or Z that I'm interested in that I don't know. And the rightist guy, you know, the rightist guy, he's interested in a new war somewhere around there. I don't care what he says. I'm thrust on my own resource. I want to know what he has to say about, you know, the CIA changing the rules of the game in the middle of the...
Has anybody addressed that at all?
I don't know. Not that I know of. But, I mean, that's so transparent. So, anyway, but, I mean, this makes everybody, they are people, human beings are forced to rely on themselves now. Instead of the editor of the newspaper, the news director at the TV channel, you know, it's...
Everything is about collectivization of thought, action.
Yeah.
It takes a village to rule you. I mean, whatever it is. We just had in the hour before you came on, you got to say, yo, what's up to Glenn. These young people in Europe, they've experienced, they understand what's going on. They got a little bit of a, you know, there's a tale of this communist Eastern Bloc thing, and they're going, yeah, we can, and once they hear liberty, each one of them, they go, once they heard this, or Red Atlas Shrugged, they go, whoa, I get it. I've been healed. Well, how is that being missed here in America? No, of course there's a lot of young people doing this, and they got it, but is it enough? It's always enough. I mean, sooner or later, timing just, you know, makes it happen. Are we getting closer to that time? Is there something coming?
I know the decentralization process is going to keep unfolding whether people are ready for it or not. So, you know, there's always the leading edge. There's always the remnant. There are always the people, that, you know, that are kind of ready for it. Your listeners are ready for it. They know that decentralization is the order of technology, of education, of religion, of the monetary system, of the legal system. They know that decentralization of the media, decentralization, they know that that's the answer. You know, it's time for the old centralized control to be their grip to
Pirates
be
Pirates Without Borders.
Yeah, they know that. There are other people I have to be dragged screaming in and kicking, not by us, not by force. They don't need to be dragged by us into the future. They're going to be dragged into the future by
circumstances. You know, but why? What are they holding on to? See, it's a lot of, I'm looking, okay, you ever heard of the Myers-Briggs personality test thing?
Yeah.
You know, I did this on a couple that was visiting from Ireland. And the guy, and he's just, she like, you know, yeah, he always this, you know, and you could see, you know, what do they call it? ENTJ, you know, the commander thing, which is what, you know, I come out at. And it's just, it's only like, I don't know, 3% of the people, but it's just, everybody has their own personality. And this personality is kind of, you know, let's go get some. Well, I could tell Barry Kerwin, I'm going, I already know it. You know, we were talking about it at some, you know, micro pub, and they're Irish, and, you know, see what kind of beer you got, you know, so we're going at it. And Donna was gone. She was at a thing that day, so we went out drinking. So we're sitting there talking. I said, you so got to do this. It's like 70 questions. It takes like 10, 15 minutes to do this thing. So you go through, what do you think of this? This is kind of a revealing person. I thought it was an interesting test. And it was one of Adam's guys did me, you know, a couple years ago. I said, yeah, as long as it's on your phone, because I ain't doing it on mine. You know, I don't want them to know. So we go through this thing. Sure enough, there's certain personality traits that you can see. Yep, you guys are like, yep, you think like that. Yep, this is what's important to you. Yep. I could see that he was this type. Once you see these different things, you can tell. Well, these are the people that make changes. You know, this is the ones that, you know, really, you know, influence all these other guys. I'm wondering what you are.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, it would be interesting. Yeah. You know, but they all fall into I want to know the truth category. Yeah. You know, are they vaccinating and medicalizing and fluoriding and GMOing us out of this personality? You see my point?
Yeah, sure.
It seems like there's just a little bitty tweak, and if they can do it, we need to get them a flu shot. Hey,
this
they
is
do
all,
it.
But this is all covered in you know, Brave New World. I mean, human beings were genetically modified into being alphas, betas, deltas, yeah, and stuff like that. And you know, the delta didn't know that he was a delta. He just was whoever he was. So he didn't know he'd been genetically modified, and you know, into. But I mean, you know. Look, what won't they do? If they'll lie you into war...
If they can.
Yeah. If they'll lie into war, is there something they won't do?
You know, we have the infrastructure now is becoming a lot more obvious. Like, we've been screaming this, and you're crazy right up until you're not. And there's a meme here, you know, Greg Tivenin, and you know Greg, he sends it, you need to get on this list. He sends this, you know, a meme every day, and it's just, you know, nothing. I go, you send me the memes, I'll put it up on free, and maybe not. Because I go, no, I don't think these are going to go. But this one could. It says, duck, duck, go, because Google is so 1984.
Yeah, no, how true.
Right. Yeah. See, this stuff is funny. So that's why they got to attack the memes. Yeah. Go, no, this meme war thing. And when they did this NPC, non-player character, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You know, what that? You go on some video game, and every time you bump the bum around, he's always, hey, stop it, man. Hey, stop it, man. Hey, you know, and then you may have a second phrase or something. You come around the other direction in the block. But people just, and I understood exactly what they meant. It was right on target, and that's why the left freaked out. You can't, that's so what? What the hell is that? They're NPCs, non-player characters. That's so demeaning. That's so something. You can't have that depiction. I'm going, wow, man, did that hit close to home or what?
Yeah.
We're like living in a matrix or something.
I know.
Yeah, they're just non-player characters.
I know.
Well, what do you think the influence is now? I mean, you go online, you write books, you're doing movies now and so on. What do you think influence in the future is going to be like that you're going to have a role in? Or hell, if there's going to be influence at all.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I don't really know. I just, like, do what I'm, you know, feel compelled to do, just like you're doing what you're compelled to do, and you add your voice to the public discussion, and you don't know what the results will be necessarily, but you know that you couldn't live with yourself if you didn't do what you thought was right.
Yeah. Grandpa, what did you do during the revolution?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, how old is your oldest grandchild now?
She would be, say, six, I would say.
Really?
Yeah. I have one that turns one this month. My youngest one turns one this month. He just learned to walk the other day. We watched the video of him learning to walk about 300 times.
I know. Sierra just had her second child.
Wow.
So now we're up to 12.
Wow, 12.
Boom.
Wow.
Well, three of them are step-grandchildren, but, you know, I've known them since they were, yeah, sure, you know, preschool. So
fine. Come on in the family.
Yeah, no.
You're part of the family.
They're like, damn.
You can't get out. You're in. You can't get out.
All the in-laws.
You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave.
You know, this is. Well, today, Corsair's children come, which means a bunch of others will too, you know, because he's in Chandler area. So they'll be here because they're in fall break or something. They got a bunch of breaks, whatever they got. So they're coming here and we'll hang. And then I got to leave in a day and a half. So, you know, I get to spend some time with them or tomorrow. And the impact that this philosophy has on young children that they can get. They don't have to have this cognitive dissonance where they got like competing ideas in their head that they got to jumble and they just go, God, mom and dad's full of crap. You know, this is, it's not logical. Libertarian philosophy of, you know, you own you.
Yeah.
You own your stuff. You might want to share, but, you know, we got property right thing. You don't, you, all this kind of freedom oriented, it's logical. And, yeah, and a lot of times they seek that, want that. When we're talking to language of liberty guys from Europe, they're going, man, where's this been all my life?
Yeah.
Well, they sure as hell don't want you to be exposed to it at school. And they used to. And when I was going to elementary school in the 70s, 60s, 70s, and high school in the late 70s, by junior high, so like 76, 8, round, no, 75, 6, round in there, 1984 and Brave New World, all these were like required reading. They're not anymore.
Well, I know. Yeah, we're missing them. So here's my earliest memory. I remember of kind of this stuff. I remember asking my first grade teacher, or was, it could have been second. I don't remember. I remember her face. But anyways, first or second grade teacher. I said, well, what is the difference between a president and a king? And she kind of fumbled around. I don't remember everything she said until she got to the bottom line. She said, so she's trying to make the point about democracy, I'm pretty sure, you know, and so she, but she finally, she got to the bottom line and she said, so basically, you know, the king is just the head of the government, you know, whether anybody wants him there or not, but the president is there because people want him. And I thought, well, that's the most ridiculous thing ever. You come to my house, you hear my dad doesn't want him. So I knew right then, you know, that just because they say that's the answer doesn't mean that that's the answer.
You know, I remember in second grade, it was Nixon's election. So it had to be 68. Yeah, that's probably right. 68. Second, third grade. I can't remember. I think it's probably second grade around then. And Nixon was running. And I remember my father saying something. So I repeated it at school. You know, I'm just repeating when, you know, I'm, yeah, seven. Sure. You know, what do I know? And I go, ah, Nixon will never get us out of Vietnam. Teacher freaked out. Okay. Yeah, yeah. One, you're assuming I know what Vietnam is.
Yeah.
Well, you'd see it on TV every day at dinner. You know, you kind of go. And the response from it, from a teacher, on what a student would say, on what their parents said. And from then I'm going, you know, I kept my mouth shut about anything my parents ever said about politics or anything from then on, because it would just, it sparked something that I didn't know anything really about what was going on. And, but the teacher was willing to counteract my parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going, that right there, I was going, whoa, what? If my dad knew what you said, I'm just going to be quiet, yeah, about this. This is going to become a thing. Well, hell, that's like expected now. You got to turn in your parents.
Yeah. So I had a sixth grade teacher at public school in Flagstaff, and he was, I liked him a lot, but he was really leftist. He came, he went on to be a state senator, and he was a state senator for a long time. I think a pretty powerful state senator for a long time. But he was my sixth grade teacher before he became an elected official. And I used to come home from school, and we'd sit at, we'd have dinner, you know, and I go, you know what my teacher said today? Because I was like, this was all scrambling my brain, you know, he said this, but we don't think that around this household.
Right.
And I remember my older brother goes, boy, have you been indoctrinated? And I go, I don't even know what that word means. You know. But it was good for me because I started paying attention.
Well, your father was a, yeah, philosophy professor at, yeah, NAU.
Right.
I mean, you know, that has a little to do with your upbringing.
It helped. He taught us all, at least, you know, to question all of our presuppositions. You know, that's the Socratic thing, you know. Oh, two heads are better than one. Yeah, I remember walking through the campus and seeing a sign on one of the bulletin boards in the hallway not far from his office. And it says, you know, I don't know, it's, you know, talking about cooperation or something. And the sign said in a big funny cartoon and stuff, big sign, said, two heads are better than one. And he saw me look at that as we walked by and he goes, are they? And I go, well, I don't really know. I don't really know.
Maybe 200 are.
Yeah, so for some things, they would be, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, so...
So just question it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what's
is
some
that
of the...
So?
What do you think some of these sayings or the inputs in the society that we get now? You know, here, I'll give you an example. You have the media, then you rock the vote. You know, you got vote or die, vote or die. I mean, you know, all these things that they're injecting into the next generations just to get them to regurgitate it. You know, what are some of these tropes that you think are going around now?
I'll tell you something. I was a rock and roll disc jockey in my youth, in my misspent youth. But when I see something like, you know, rock the vote, I'm thinking, I don't want anybody to vote that wants the vote rocked. I don't know exactly what that means, but if they want to be motivated by an expression like rock the, hey, let's rock the vote, I don't want them voting. You know,
and maybe I don't want the vote rock. Yeah. I don't want that.
And I used to hear this all the way through. We used to get these. My first job in radio, we used to get all of these public service announcements. You know that, you know. So if the time wasn't sold out, if you didn't have sponsors, you know, and there were, you know, in the middle of the newscast, you had a break and stuff, and you'd run a public service announcement. People don't hear a lot of those, but there were all these kind of collectivist public service announcements. You know, by U.S. savings bonds, mm-hmm. you know, and they filled the hole where a commercial had to go if you didn't have the time. So, and it was all of this stuff, and it was stuff like encouraging people to vote. And I thought, wait a minute, all these people vote against the things that I want, because, you know, every election that's won is won by somebody I didn't want, you know. So I thought, what am I running this stuff for? I can't run this stuff.
Well, do you think that's true? I mean, you know me, how we first got on your show back in the early 90s is because I was doing the voter registration thing, and vote this time it matters, register, because now you can register yourself. You're not a deputy registrar from the party saying, oh, you can't be libertarian. I mean, you know, so that was, you know, my first foray into this as I go, now there's an opportunity for us to not be selected so much by these deputy registrars, that people can just do it. And how I got on your show is we were putting them, we got like tens of thousands of us, like, I don't know, 100, you know, at least 60, 70,000 voter registration forms. And we got them to the fast food community. We went to, remember the Pizza Hut guy came in and we talked about it?
Yeah, I remember.
Pizza Hut and Domino's and McDonald's and Wendy's and all that. What happened was we give them a pack of like 50 or 100 and they want more. And I'm going, wow, man, a bunch of people must be coming up and getting them on the front counter. They go, no, it was the employees. They just started putting them in the hiring jackets. They could just register to vote when they get, you know, McDonald's America job. And I'm going, wow, it didn't dawn on me that the demand for voter registration, that these deputy registrars from the parties were not going, you know, to where these guys were, right. You know, the poor, I got a job at, you know, Circle K or something. Well, the employees, and you got these fast food restaurants will have, you know, 80, 100 employees, and they were just flooding through these and getting all registered to vote. They got a bunch of young people going, hell no!
Yeah.
They wanted to stop, and that's how I got on your show, is they were trying to stop this because there was a bunch of young people registering, and I'm going,
so song about it. Democracy's good when the vote goes our way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they don't want these
young. It's not good when they vote against us.
Well, if they can get them indoctrinated, they will.
Sure.
You know. So it's been so obvious to me over my years of activism, and I deal where the rubber meets the road. I'm out on the streets. We're going to do bypass sign. The Vaccine Education Summit stuff, we got big signs. You know, the summit, a QR code that goes to all the videos. We already start putting them up or making them, doing the activists, putting them around everywhere, because it needs to be a campaign now to scare legislators when they come in January. And I go, no, if you don't do it now, they're going to, oh, no, we got it. It's May. You have nobody running against them. They didn't do anything, and you're done. And I'm going, why you guys keep doing that? You know, they're lying to you now. Don't wait till later. What, you think, you know, later the lie is going to turn into a truth? Or something? What, you think they're not lying? Of course they're lying. They don't want this issue. You know, I'm like, because it's so revealing.
All the institutions of our time are in crisis, and they're all breaking down, and they're becoming irrelevant, and that's the only...
Irrelevant.
That's the only way to, you know, reclaim our freedom, is their irrelevancy. So let them pass the laws that they want, whatever, you know, that's fine, you know.
No, this is the guy last night. You know, I mean, you got a Orthodox Jewish Russian moved here from America at a young age, still got contact, knows what's up, and got, you know, wants to express his opinion, and he thinks he has a big opinion. Well, he's going, but if they get Congress to pass a law, I go, obviously, that's the one part he didn't get.
Yeah, he didn't get that.
You know how many laws I ignore? You know,
they don't even know what the laws are on the books.
It doesn't matter. They enforce it a different way anyway.
This was funny in the Trump thing about Ukraine. Is like his attorneys got really, really busy about, you know, and they went and they dug up a law that says the president is required, when there's evidence of corruption in dealing with foreign governments, to demand of the foreign governments that they give them the evidence of the corruption. You know,
so, really, there's that law.
There's such a law, but I mean, there's a law that says anything. You can find a law that says anything.
I know, it's like the Bible.
Yeah. Anyway, well, okay.
All right. So this is, what do you think, before we end this, we got to give people from your perspective all the stuff that you've gone through, and you and I've gone through, and I've gone through, and all that. I just need to, you know, ask directly, and the reason that, you know, I love talking to you is that I always get a clear picture of the future.
I don't know, but we've shared a lot of experiences in the past too.
Yeah, but but that gives us kind of a view on the future.
It does,
I'm wondering, you know, as we're, because Arizona, we're going to bring it back 2020 here, because it's getting so bad. They're resurrecting a bunch. I could see it going again because they think they can get away with it. And I'm going, oh, I'm so glad when you guys do that. You know, let's talk about it. And now we have the media platform and the immutability IPFS and a lot of other stuff that we can have an impact, and it's going to stay there. And it's hilarious. Well, we'll get Ernie. You know, we'll shut down the kind of the Cox cable if you didn't kind of, you know, yeah, mesh network, a space-based freaking suck it. Now what? Damn it, I hate when he does that, you know? But they're going to do it. And in 2020, what would you like to see, that you would see a success in this educational time slot, presidential, whatever the hell is going on? What would you like to see? I'd do it for you, just because I love you.
Yeah. In the state of Arizona, you mean?
Yeah. Well, it'd be they have impact everywhere else. I mean, because it's always Arizona, and then it influences everywhere else.
I can't even think of anything. I can't, you know, my entire focus is on the people that drop bombs on people around the world, the people that are destroying, the money, the people's money and their savings and their futures. My entire focus is on all of this kind of national stuff where you have the least impact. Well, I mean, it's funny. You can have more impact doing something in Arizona. You can't stop what these clowns are doing on the global stage, but they're the ones that draft your kids. You know, they're the ones. They're the ones that destroy your future. They're the ones that plunder your bank account. They're the ones that do the things that really, really, really hurt people on a big scale.
They
destroy jobs. They destroy people's livelihoods. You know, so, you know, whether Arizona decides to build the 303 or the 202 to the 404 or whatever the big thing is, you know, I don't even really watch it anymore.
You know, I'm looking for the spirit, the rebellion that Arizona usually has.
Right.
You know, it's always like you got that nail thing. You got a 2x4 with 50 nails in it. You know, which one's getting hammered?
Yeah.
The one that's sticking up the most.
Yeah, sure.
It's always freaking Arizona.
But
isn't
that been so watered down now by all the people who moved here from, from more state
estates? Which is why it needs to be resurrected.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's, you know, because I go, no, you moved to Arizona for a reason.
Right.
You know, get away from all these other, quit bringing in your other reasons. You know, the reason we get this stuff, like they do Californication of, you know, Payson or Prescott, or they, because these political, sociopathic, whatever, because they can. They move in, they go, ooh, there's no community. They have some money left.
Yeah, I know.
we've built some sidewalks.
We've destroyed paradise in, say, Southern California. We've left the people broke. Businesses can't thrive. Everybody's got to get the hell out. So let's go to Arizona and bring the same policies with us.
Yeah, we'll have mandated vaccinations there too.
Yeah.
You know, this is and what's different about Arizona, and why I enjoy it, and why we've been, I'd say, successful in a lot of ways with the amount of money and effort that we put in. I mean, we put a lot of effort, but I mean, okay, it wasn't like some government program funded this or Soros gave me money or anything, you know. But we've been successful in popularizing individualism in Arizona. And just that concept right there is a foundation of so many other opinions. If I can do that and further that ball along, is that the proper role of government, defense of individual rights. I make that a meme.
Great.
We do go out, boom, we win.
Hey, I believe in the economic principle called division of labor. You know, there's a job that Ernie can do that nobody else can touch. And I think I think we're a lot better off if Ernie is doing it. So I'm all in favor. There's a job for Charles. I, you know, do as best I can. I don't know if it makes any changes or improvements, but it's what I'm compelled to do by who I am. And so I'm going to do that. So we need all kinds of people with all kinds of gifts to put them to work on our behalf.
See, I think a lot of people like us are dusting off their hat.
That's good.
You know, I'm glad. The last few, you know, it's got, and you're like the, you know, the discussion group that we go to, these, you know, the hoity-toity, hi, you ain't going to explain it to us, political, the think tank kind of crap. And every year, they're just like, God, you guys, you think you get it, you know? I don't know. Maybe they get it. That's just where they get their mess or their job, you know? But the population where the real movements are is a lot of the stuff that we do.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going, look, man, I'm going to guarantee freaking T-White gets discussed. You think the vaccine issue wants to be discussed by pharma in 2020?
Hell no.
Hell no. But guess what they're going to be talking about?
Before I leave, I got to ask you something. Did you probably know Gene Epstein is a guy who was a writer in Barron's magazine. He's a libertarian guy, a little older than me, I would guess. But he's been around a long time, been a good force.
I'm not familiar.
But he conducts these debates now. I don't know whether he's retired, but he conducts these debates, pretty high-level debates, in New York, and they put them online. And he had one with some comedian who has a really popular libertarian podcast.
Oh, the Soho thing.
Yeah, the Soho debates.
Yeah, I watched that.
It was great.
Dave Smith versus Nick Sarwar.
Yeah, it was great. That was one of the best things I've ever seen.
It was perfect.
And to my shame, well, not to my shame, but I didn't even know who Dave Smith was, but I sent him a note after that.
Yeah, I know, he's just a comedian.
You go, man.
I go, Donna, get him. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Get him on. Get him on. Because we've had Nick on, and Nick is, you know, he privately and on this show, he'll say the same thing that he did up there. Well, vote totals and money and membership. I'm going, what the hell are you? I mean, this is all why I kept running. Well, Charles and I went to the Atlanta National Convention in 2004.
Oh.
And the whole reason was because Neil Bortz was up there doing the pro-war, got kick-ass in Afghanistan.
Wait a minute. He's
a libertarian.
He's speaking at a dinner speech or a lunch speech.
It was a breakfast night.
But he's a main speaker draw at the Libertarian National Convention, and he's up there talking about the joys of Bush's war in Iraq.
So in the next room,
unbelievable,
Charles and I go, you know, there's some talk show hosts that are anti, well, what the hell are you guys doing? And we got a nice little crowd. You know, people came over, they didn't want to go to, you know, but that's what we're dealing with even inside the movement.
It's unbelievable.
It's the incentives. Yeah. It's the money, that what they think. Well, why do they call Arizona the libertarian state in the Wall Street Journal? Because at the time in the 90s, we were getting more press than all the other states and Libertarian National combined. It was all Arizona, 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 because we did the opposite of what they were saying. They go running nonpartisan races and don't mention drugs and guns.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we're going in partisan races, and we're mentioning guns and drugs. Guns and weed, guns and weed. I'm like, are you stupid? You know, it's a free whatever. So this is, I don't know. The best I heard was Drew Phillips, one of the activists, said, he goes, the Libertarian National Conventions are like the high school dance. It's where you go to find out where the cool kids are going to be partying. That's what's going on.
Yeah.
So you go and you kind of meet with them, and then you go do your cool stuff.
But now you're probably part of it, or at least know about it, because I don't know anything about it. But there's something called the
Mises
Caucus now, and that's Tom Woods and stuff.
They came to New Orleans convention a couple of blocks away. They had to, and the Libertarian Party was worried. They're afraid they're going to have impact on whatever, but they didn't really understand. It was just an ignoring. It was just, yeah, we're over here. Screw you. You think we give a crap? What, you know, I don't care. But I think Tom Woods, you know, he's kind of, man, don't make me have to run for Presidente. And then you have this Justin Amash thing. Well, I was at Freedom Fest, and I see Nick Gillespie from Reason went over, you know, and say, yo, what's up? And Nick and all that. They're sitting there conspiring, you know, there's going to be this Justin, you know, Coctopus thing or something. We'll see what happens there. But during all of this, I've been talking to Bumper Hornberger, okay, Jacob Hornberger from Future Freedom Foundation. Well, Jacob, I think he's going to run for the Libertarian nomination. He's already been going to state conventions all around the country, and I think he's going to do it.
Great.
And I'm going.
Great.
So, you know, Jacob Hornberger, he's what percentage of Ron Paul?
96.
Yeah, it's up there.
Yeah.
So it's going to be. So Jacob is one of those, he can rationally articulate any issue to the libertarian message of.
He's been really good. Tom Woods has been really good. Either one of them I'd be so happy with. I might re-register as a libertarian again.
Hornberger goes up there, and I want to see the debate with Justin Amash and whatever else.
Yeah.
Now, there's a bunch of other guys that are running, too, and they'll be up. But, I mean, it's going to come down to...
I know who should be the nominee. Bill Weld. It's so disgusting.
It was just, and them to defend that, Nick to get up there. I mean, it has been, he's a lawyer. I mean, that's obvious. You know, Nick's like, he moved to New Hampshire to be part of the Free State Project.
Well, great.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, pace. You know, I mean, like Nick and his family, you know, his wife and kids been over and kind of, you know, and they get beat up in the pool where they can't get out and all the, you know, the Trump guys were just slamming. Because he embraced this anybody but Trump to the point of we can help get a Democrat elected. And they'll give us a bunch of money. You know, that's what was going on. And I'm going, wow. Wow. You know, let's run for something. What happened to us running for stuff and educating?
Well, it bothers me just on a fundamental level because their motto remains.
Party of principle.
The party of principle.
Which they've been trying to run away from.
What's the principle? What exactly is the principle?
Principle giving us more money.
It reminds me of our old friend Cindy Sheehan, whose son was lost in Iraq, and Bush told her, well, he died for a noble cause, and she just wanted to ask him one question, and that's why they had that thing that you went to down in Phoenix, in Texas, outside of Crawford. What noble cause?
Well, somebody tell me.
What? No, he died. My son died for a noble cause. What noble cause?
I would like to put that on his picture memorial frame.
Yeah.
He died for what? A noble cause? Yeah, what? Yeah. That was the whole thing.
Yeah.
It was her trying to get him to answer that.
Well, you know, we were talking about, you know, like leftist websites and stuff, and they used to be, you know, they're good. They're good for certain facts, you know, but they have a very limited...
Now, you're a big fan of Fire Dog Lake.
Yeah, I used to use it and go to... Well, okay, here's how to encapsulate that whole story. So Cindy Sheehan's kind of liberal, you know, and her son dies in Iraq. She wants to know what noble cause the president has lied to her, lied to the nation about a war. And she says, well, what noble cause? I'm going to go down there and ask him the question. You go down there and cover it. But here's the thing. When Bush was president, Cindy Sheehan was all over, like, you know, all the left media outlets and... Who was that sportscaster that was, you know, on MSNBC? But he's still around doing sports, but it's...
I know who you're talking about.
And
Oberman.
Keith Oberman, yeah. And there was like, I don't know, there were a ton of these people, and it was like Goodman or whatever her name is, Jane Goodman or whatever that does... that's not her name, but she
now from liberal television, YouTube, whatever the heck it was.
And they couldn't
Amy.
Amy Goodman. And they couldn't get enough of Cindy Sheehan. And she came out here after Obama won at your house in your backyard. And I reacquainted myself with her. And I said, tell me what's going on. And she said, well, it's really funny. They couldn't get me on the air enough until the day that Barack Hussein Obama was elected president. Keith Olbermann, Amy Goodman, none of them. They will not talk to me because they're afraid I might say something about Obama's wars.
That was, I saw it happen and talked to Cindy, and I did an interview, recorded it on this issue. Move on, went to her and said, phased withdraw and not this, just immediately leave. If you don't say that, we're going to abandon you. She wouldn't say it. They abandoned her. That's what happened. This whole thing, they turned on her because move on. It's just the top of the pyramid. You got the all CNI controlling both sides.
Yeah, sure.
You can see it was military, industrial, whatever the hell.
Yeah, sure.
It was just a bleed. Everybody always wants to know, what happened to the anti-war movement? Where's the anti-war movement? I can't believe there's no anti-war movement. If you have a Bumper Hornberger, there's going to be an anti-war movement.
Absolutely. Tom Woods, Bumper Hornberger, it's going to be an anti-war movement. And there's going to be a place to rally around. But right now, with Bill Weld... And Nick Sarwark and stuff, there's not a place to
run. Well, you know what Bill did? You know where he went?
The Republicans.
Yeah.
After he endorsed Hillary.
He's going to run against Trump.
Yeah, he's going to,
endorsing Hillary. I'm like, what the hell are these guys thinking?
Yeah, but it's been like that all the time. Who was the guy that ran for vice president a few years ago? Wayne Allen Root. And so as soon as the election was over, he went back to, you know, the Republican Party to cheer on wars.
Oh, you'll dig this. We were at Freedom Fest. He's up there with Candace Owen, the attractive, slender black woman.
What's he doing at Freedom Fest?
Because he was build the wall. And he argued the idea with Doug Casey and I can't remember the guy's name from India was there, and they were talking about open borders.
Dinesh D'Souza.
No, no, it was an older guy with white hair and beard and traditional whatever. But anyway, so he was there, and Wayne Allyn Root, he's a product of his affirmation. I mean, you know, people clap, yeah, for the wall. Woohoo! And he's like, yeah, yeah, get him. I mean, he was freaking amped up, you know, having this kind of feedback for this position that he wouldn't get in libertarian circles advocating for, well, that's not a libertarian thing, but he got the positive reinforcement from Build the Wall crowd. Freedom Fest, when they said, how many Build the Wall? It was 70%. Not enforce the law, not, you know, regulate, immigrate, not, no, build the freaking wall. After the debate, you know, it was about the same. You know, it was like two people changed their mind to build the wall, okay? And we have Doug Casey gets up, and this was his thing. He goes, doesn't matter. The tsunami of human capital, what's going to flood, and you can build your wall. All you want, you're going to do is keep us in. I mean, you know, he goes, that wall isn't going to matter. It's going to overwhelm whatever's coming, and you guys better be prepared for that. And if you think this wall is going to help you, it ain't. Okay, you know, so that was basically, you know, his presentation. Well, of course, people don't want to hear that. You know, even though he's right. You know, when it comes, and ain't nothing they can do about it. So I'm, where's the popularity demonstrated for freedom? Well, wasn't that Freedom Fest? I didn't see that. They were complaining last year it was too anarchist. So I'm going, what the hell is going on? So the future, I get in impassioned by a lot of issues, but it's always issues. It's like gun rights, medical freedom, monetary, taxes, it's all, but it's never really, you get, except in libertarian circles, that it is all about the same concept of I own myself, and what I produce is mine, and it's not yours, and you don't get to tell, that's the whole purpose of government, defense of individual rights. That is not articulated. No. Why? I mean, you'd think, well, we were successful in what we did by articulating that, but it sure as hell isn't supported by the media, and you get five adjectives.
Yeah, I went to Freedom Fest once, and I watched, you know, like two-thirds or 75% of the people stand up and cheer Herman Cain after he gave some statist, you know, statist speech.
Yeah.
And I don't have anything against Herman Cain, but, I mean, it's like, you know what? This is called the Freedom Fest. Maybe it ought to be a forum to talk about advancing, you know, like freedom.
Well, Mark Skousen, you know, we have him on before to do the Freedom Fest. I've known him for a long time. We met him, got it, Era Society back in 3 weeks before 9/11 in 01, and he ran, you know, he was the golden apple bearer of the Era Society that Doug Casey does up in Aspen. And kind of, that was my first experience with him. He went to Heritage and Orfee or something there, and that kind of didn't work out well because it's this Republican, conservative, constitutional Christian kind of thing.
He went to Fee, and he hired for the Fee Summit annual Founders Dinner or whatever it was, some big event. The keynote speaker was Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, my God.
You know, and the people just going, what? You know, well, he's trying to ingratiate himself with, you know, well-positioned Republicans. That's what he's trying to do.
Well, you know, the one that I talked to him, I'm going, how in the hell are you getting these speak? What that guy? He goes, well, they apply. I go, that's it? I apply? You get me? He goes, yeah. Here we come.
They apply to speak?
Yeah. He just like, yeah, okay, we got a slot for you. Done. Next. Peace. But, of course, they want you to come and pay. Even as an author, you get a table. That'll be $750, and yeah, we'll give you a slot over here in the room of whatever. I mean, that's pretty much how it works. So I'm looking for – I tell you where they are, where you need to go, and I get you as a speaker. I think it'd be awesome is Narcopoco. You know, Anarcha-Vegas, Anarchazona, Anarchadelphia. It's all these anarchist things that are just packed with thousands of people who are going, hey, pox in all your houses.
Maybe when my new book comes out, I should do that.
Boom!
Yeah.
Hook you up. When's it come out?
I think end of January, 1st of February. It hasn't been announced. You know, like all the final
details. Anarchapoco is in February.
The ink isn't dry yet, but that would be the time, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, we'll talk.
Yeah, I think we should do that. That'd be interesting to have this. We'll hook that up. We'll see if we can get the guys to do it. Yeah, because this is, you can see from our perspective, we've been through it. We know, we get it. It's just a game. But this game has taken what turn coming in, this coming cycle. I think some stuff is going to rear its head. What do you think?
I think so. At least we're all, cursed under that old curse about interesting times, right?
And come to the attention of powerful people.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to happen, and we're trying to get ready for it. It's like your networking, where you have your data, because when it's the most important time and you got something to save, then you're off. I guarantee it. 2020, they will not 8, 12, 16, 18, they will not allow this to happen again. They got sideswiped by the revolution. They got sideswiped by Trump getting elected. They don't want to get sideswiped again, and gosh darn it, we, they, them, those, we're going to make sure of. So what do? I like signs on the freeways. Try and stop that pace.